This reading is from Galatians 3, verse 10 to 18. For all who rely on the works of the law are under a curse. As it is written, cursed is everyone who does not continue to do everything written in the book of the law. Clearly, no one who relies on the law is justified before God, because the righteous will live by faith. The law is not based on faith. On the contrary, it says, the person who does these things will live by them. Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone who is hung on a pole. He redeemed us in order that the blessing given to Abraham might come to the Gentiles through Jesus Christ, so that by faith we might receive the promise of the Spirit. Brothers and sisters, let me take an example from everyday life. Just as no one can set aside or add to a human covenant that has been duly established, so it is in this case. The promises were spoken to Abraham and to his seed. Scripture does not say, and to seeds, meaning many people, but and to your seed, meaning one person, who is Christ. What I mean is this. The law, introduced 430 years later, does not set aside the covenant previously established by God and thus do away with the promise. For if the inheritance depends on the law, then it no longer depends on the promise. But God, in his grace, gave it to Abraham through a promise.
Thanks so much for that, Daniel. Paul is still in the midst of this argument, and here he's really talking about the law. And I want us to imagine for a moment, what would it be like without a law? Imagine if there was no law, there'd never been a law, there was no way of measuring right or wrong. It kind of sounds like a funny question, but this is actually the world that the ancients lived in. There was no law up until about 2000 BC. When a king by the name of Ur-Nammu, and he wrote down this law, like I said, about 2000 years before Christ. And this was a law that he gave his people to help them figure out what was right and what was wrong. He said things like, hey, you shouldn't kill people and don't steal. Like, this was when we're starting to see the origins of these. But interesting things happen in these laws that I find fascinating is, how do we find out if someone's guilty? There was no kind of court of law at that time. So what they did is, if someone was accused of something, they would put that person, they would throw that person into the river. And if the person was able to escape and not drown, then the gods determined this person to be innocent. But if the person drowned, the gods determined the person guilty. A bit odd, but this was how it was in that time. Another king, several years later, about 200 years later, in the same empire, he wrote a far more extensive code of law. This was King Hammurabi, over 200 laws, and you can still read them today, although I don't know if you or I can read Sumerian hieroglyphics, but you can still actually, the tablets there, the steles there that you can actually read, and these laws have been interpreted so we can understand what almost the world was like then. And some interesting things are revealed in these ancient laws, and one of them is that they really do reveal the vast inequalities in the ancient world at that time. Let me give you an example. There's this law where if a free man strikes or hits a woman who's pregnant and the child dies, then that man owes that woman some money. It's not a great deal of money. But if that free man hits the woman and she and the child die, then the free man's daughter is to be put to death. Like, okay, how is that right? But you're starting to see people trying to work out themselves what is right and what is wrong, and how do we make punishment for that. Another thing that's interesting in this Hammurabi set of laws is that he introduces this idea of onus of proof. So the person who is making the accusation needs to prove that the accusation took place. Now, something that's interesting about what they did here is that if the person is deemed not to be guilty, then the one who made the accusation is put to death. So I don't know how many people would have been making accusations, because there would have been a great deal of fear there. You can start to see these laws are a bit muddled. They seem to be quite confusing as we look at them from the modern world. But a few hundred years later, another law was given to mankind. And that was the law of Moses, as recorded in Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. This law was vastly different. This law revealed a value for every single human being, whether you were free, whether you were slave, whether you were male, whether you were female. This law went so far to value the land. It valued the refugee. It valued the immigrant. It valued the foreigner. This law was different. This law seemed to be a giant leap forward for humanity. And this was the law that God gave Moses. Some of this law we see in Exodus 21, some of this law is outlining how this law was a giant leap forward and how it talks about slaves. Exodus 21 tells us that a slave could only be held as a slave for 6 years. And after the seventh year, the master is to let the slave go free. Now that's interesting. This is so foreign for the ancient world. But not only is the master to let the slave go free, the master is also meant to furnish this slave liberally with livestock, with fruit from the wine, and also with finances and money to help this person go forward, and land and crops. And so this is interesting, because and the essence of it is told in Exodus as well, because God has blessed you, so you should bless your slave in them leaving. Now, we kind of look at this and go, oh my goodness, slavery, this is terrible. Yes, it is. But we got to keep in mind that this is contained within the ancient world. And this law that God gave Moses was an enormous leap forward from the law of Ur-Nammu and King Hammurabi. This law, like I said before, it protected the immigrants, it protected foreigners and refugees, it protected the land. But this law, it was good, but it could never bring life. This law, it could help people understand how to live and care for their neighbor, but it could never bring this full and abundant life that we see Jesus introduce and talk about in the Gospels. It was more like a tutor. It was more like a teacher. It helped us understand the basics. But there was a time where Jesus really instructed us, you can move beyond the basics. And in order to move beyond the basics, we needed to receive something. Jesus invites us to this new way, and he introduces this spirit of God. Jesus says that he came to fulfill the law, and I wonder if that means that he came to take us beyond the law, to go beyond it into a richness and a fullness that we are unable to do through the Spirit of God. I want to give you an example of this. So the law of Moses said, don't murder one another. And the Spirit of God invites us to this revelation that, you know what, we can murder one another with our words. We can dehumanize and murder one another with our words. And aren't we seeing this played out today? The law of Moses said that you should love your neighbor. And the Spirit of God invites us beyond that to love our enemies, those who were completely opposed to you. So you can see that the Spirit of God is inviting us beyond. He's inviting us into something that's richer, something that might just give us life. Paul talks about this, and he says that Jesus even says that the Spirit of God gives us life. The language that the Jesus and Paul use to describe the Spirit is, and the Hebrew people use as well, is ruah, the breath. And the New Testament writers use this language of pneuma, also meaning breath, this life. Can you see the difference? The law of Moses, it was tactile. It was something that could be contained. Even the laws of the kings who'd gone before, they were recorded in tablets in stone, and you could read them and they could be contained. But the Spirit of God is breath. Jesus says it moves where it moves. We can't see it, but we can see its effects. The Spirit of God invites us beyond the container. The law was this container, this teacher, this tutor. But the Spirit of God is inviting us beyond that. So what does this look like for us now? I wonder if the Spirit of God isn't bringing us out of a container, an old way of doing things, and breathing life into something that's new. We know that the church isn't a building. The church is a people. We don't go to church. We are the church. I'm sure many of you are aware that we won't be gathering on Sundays at Good Life at the Center through the rest of August and also September. We are going to reassess this in October. But let's pause for a moment and ask the question, well, what are we being invited into now then? How can we be the church now? Something really cool has been happening lately. People have been gathering together in small groups, and they've been hanging out, they've been eating, they've been sharing company, they've been watching the online service, and this has been happening all across the coast, but there's people who don't have others to do this with, and I'm sure they'd love to be a part of something. How cool would it be to have little pockets, little gatherings of people from Noosa all the way down to Caloundra, where we could gather together, we could hang out with one another, we could read the scriptures, we could listen to the talks that we give on Sundays and experience worship together and really be a part of this community together, not in isolated spaces, but together in twos and threes and fours. I think that'd be pretty cool. We'd love you to be a part of that. We'd love it if you could open up your homes in your local area and invite people in. We'd love us all to open up these spaces to create opportunities for people to really connect during these times and open up our lives to what the Spirit of God might be really inviting us into. It'll be challenging, it'll be different, but where two or three are gathered, Christ is there in the midst. What might happen? I think what's really cool is it kind of reminds me of the song that many of us participated in a while ago, My God is Great, where we all sang together in our homes when we were in pretty crazy lockdown, but we were also participating together. Even though we were in our homes on our own, we were participating in something that was beyond us. And I think that's the cool thing about this invitation, that we can participate, invite people into our homes, and be a part of something that's bigger than just you and I. So if you are willing to open your homes, click on the link below so we can get your details. We can help you. We can resource you to do this well so that we can be the church together. To my feet, the rock on which I stand.